she gave me years ago. No, Louisa must never suspect that my seeming to prefer her over all others was a lie. I have acted it so well as to be believed by everybody, even by myself for a time, and I must go right on pretending. Only in this way can I purge myself of some of my guilt. I must be the model husband. I must make my wife happy and affect being happy myself. I have successfully played a part to her for these few weeks past, but can I do it for 30 years? That is a different matter. And what of Anne? I have little doubt that I have injured her, as I had intended to do. To what degree, I know not. I suppose it largely depends on any lingering feelings she may still harbor for me. There have been those occasional looks between us, those particular words that went very far towards seeming to restore the sentiments of the past. But then the accident occurred, and everything, all such considerations, were entirely at an end. Oh, how I wish I could make her some amends! How I wish I could tell Anne my true feelings, that though I have been weak and resentful, though I have cruelly courted the attentions of another in front of her face, I was never inconstant to her in my heart. I have loved none but her. To impose such knowledge upon her now, though, would be the height of selfishness. I am a selfish creature, however, and here is proof. Even though the situation is hopeless, I want to know that she still cares for me. I want to know she has remained unmarried, at least in part out of some remembrance of what we once were to each other. I want to know she will be grieved by my marriage to Louisa Musgrove when it occurs. I suppose I want to know that I will not bear the pain alone. Of these feelings I must repent, however. I do repent. And I resolve to daily pray that Anne will suffer no more, for my cruelty, for her family's disregard, or for any other reason. I resolve to sincerely desire Anne's peace and happiness, even if that means she will find them in the arms of another man. This I swear, and may God help me. Chapter 1. Attending a Wedding.
"Come along, Frederick," my younger brother Edward told me a few weeks into my stay. "You must attend. Everybody expects it."
It was the summer of 1806, and I had been put ashore shortly after our rout of the French in the intense action off San Domingo. I was a newly made master and commander, flush with the confident pride of country, of self, and of the Navy in particular, to which early success makes a man susceptible. I was feeling quite invincible, in fact. And in that dangerous mindset, I went to visit my brother, who was curate of Monkford then. That is what brought me into Somersetshire in the first place. Well, that plus the fact that I had nowhere else to go. My parents were both gone, I was not on speaking terms with my elder brother in Kent, and my only sister was at a foreign station with her naval husband.
"You already know nearly everybody who will be there," Edward continued. "And the breakfast is sure to be first rate. The Hampsteads never do anything halfway, let alone the celebration of their only daughter's nuptials. It will be the social event of the year, at least in our limited society. Absolutely not to be missed, I tell you."
Might it have been better had I simply refused to go to the wedding that day? I have asked myself that question 1,000 times. For that is where I met Anne Elliot. Had I not gone, our paths would in all probability never have crossed. I would have left Somersetshire and returned to sea with my heart and my confidence still intact, and with my conscience untroubled as well. Despite how things have turned out, however, to wish now that we had never met seems monstrous, as if I contemplated cancelling the finest woman I have ever known out of existence. Out of my existence, at least. How could I do that when I still love her? That is the unhappy fact of the matter, which I lately have been forced to concede. I am still in love with Anne Elliot,